एक भ्रम द्वितीय नाष्टी, दैट देयर इज वन ब्रह्मन, वन एब्सोल्यूट ट्रूथ एंड देयर इज नो सेकंड. देन देयर इज द फेमस महावाक्य, दिस इज फ्रॉम छांदोग्य उपनिषद, तत्वमसि, दैट यू आर द सेम एज दैट वन ब्रह्मन. So, Adi Shankaracharya has called this particular passage, Tattvamasi, Mahavakya, which means the great statement. Srila Prabhupada, in one purport, he even states that this term Mahavakya is synonymous or the same as Mahamantra. So just like we have our Hare Krishna Mahamantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hari Ram, Ram Ram, Hari Hari. So the Mayavadis have their Mahavakya, Tattvamasi. But why should these statements, Eka Brahma, Dvitiya Nashti, Tattvamasi, be taken as the Mayavadis take them, indicating that the Absolute Truth, Brahman, God, is a totally nirvishesh, impersonal entity, and is all that there is, so that we are all one with this impersonal, nameless, formless God, without any qualities, characteristics, relationships, or activities in Him. We are all one with that God. We are that God. And the perception that we're having now of differentiation, that I am me and you are you, and that there is name, form, quality, activity, this is all Maya. This is, and there Maya means it is not really there. There is absolutely nothing to this. This is a radically different understanding of Maya than taught in the Vaishnav philosophy. In Vaishnav philosophy, there is logic, logical sense to the explanation of Maya. In the Mayavadi philosophy, there is no logical sense at all. Therefore, Mayavadis have this term, anirvichaniya, that actually things like Maya, not only Maya, but also Brahman, and many other important philosophical questions, they cannot be expressed. Anirvachaniya means it cannot be talked about. So if fundamental elements of this philosophy, this so-called world-conquering philosophy, so much still today revered in India as being the darshan, Advaita Vedanta, if this world-conquering philosophy is so perfect, then why are key points classified as inexpressible? We can't really, in other words, anirvachaniya means it can't be explained. Don't ask about Maya, because it is Maya. You start talking about it, then you're in illusion. So never mind. That's what they say. So this is what Prabhupada called word jugglery. And what they're trying to do is smooth over the great gaps in their logical system. So in Vaishnava philosophy, Maya is Maya, is capable of bewildering us because it is a representation of the truth, a misrepresentation. A very apt analogy would be a counterfeit bill. So if I or anyone were to print on their private home printing press in their basement $100 bills. And I was very expert to make them very exact duplicates of genuine $100 bills. And then I were to go out and go to the bank and exchange them for rupees and so on and so forth, spend that money. So that is an example of what in Vaishnava philosophy you understand to be Maya. People are tricked by this $100 bill, which is illusory, because it looks like a real $100 bill. But the Mayavadi explanation of Maya is that this illusion has no foundation. So imagine if I were to go to my printing press and print out a bill of completely my own imagination. It would not resemble any known currency in the world. I would give it my own name, Gronko. I would print out many thousands of 100 Gronko notes. And I would go to the bank and I would ask them, can you please give me the current rupee rate for this 100 Gronko bill? And the teller would look at the bill and look at me and scratch his head and wonder, he would look at the calendar. Is it April 1st? Is it April Fool's Day? What is he trying to do here? He would not be able to connect this with anything. And so he would not be fooled by it. You cannot fool anyone with a 100 Gronko note. Because it does not represent or misrepresent anything. And yet this is the philosophy of Maya taught by the Mayavadis. That everything really is all one, nameless, formless, without any relationship in it, without any quality, nirguna, nirvishesh, nirakar, all of this near. And we are all that, tattvamasi, eka brahma, there's only that one thing, and nothing else. And what is this? Oh, this is Maya. Well, why am I fooled by this Maya then? Anirvachaniya. Don't ask that question. You see. This is a very shoddy job of philosophy. It's amazing how people are so fascinated by it and believe in it. Just like my disciples here yesterday, they met one gentleman. What place? Some taxi stand or something? Huh? Telephone booth, running a telephone booth. And he gave them a picture of his guru, the great Samartha Maharaj, a very big name here in Maharashtra, along with Shirdi Chai and Gajanand, the Trimurti of Maharashtra. And so Samartha and these others, they are famous impersonalist Mayavadis, and somehow everyone has come under their power, not everyone of course, but many, many people have come under their power. But this is a kind of, Srila Prabhupada says, it is less intelligence, it is foolishness. You see, it is like being hit in the head with a brick, and then you're dizzy, and you forget everything. And you're staggering, and then someone says, oh, you got a glimpse of Brahman. All the sense was knocked out of your head. And they say, ah, now you're realized, self-realized. So it is, yes, it is interesting. As Prabhupada, he was in this purport touching on the differing views within Mayavadi philosophy. So it is interesting for our own education and our own defense against this deception Because actually this Mayavadi, this Nirvishesha philosophy, is the background consciousness of this material world. The qualification for coming into this material world is to accept this philosophy that I am God, that I am the center of everything. Everything is me, the self with a capital S. So Shankaracharya, Adi Shankaracharya, he propounded this philosophy, but his writings are very terse. He's making bold statements, but not taking a lot of pains to fill in these statements with very close reasoning. Because his mission actually was to push Buddhism out of India, to bring people back to the shelter of the Vedas. And so he was building a bridge between the philosophy that was in people's minds at the time, this Buddhist philosophy, which is the original Mayavad, Sharanat Mayavad. So he's building a bridge from that to the Vedas. And he wanted people, his aim was to simply to get people to take up the Vedic culture again. So he didn't have much time, Shankaracharya, he did not live a long life. So he wrote many commentaries, but they are very terse. And they have great power on his authority as a very good, excellent sannyasi, a mystic. He's Lord Shiva, obviously. So, but then, after people had some time, after Shankaracharya did this, brought everyone back to the Vedas, kicked Buddhism out of India, then after a while people had some time to think about this philosophy, and many questions started to come up. And so impersonalist philosophers after Shankaracharya, they tried in their commentaries to answer these questions. So soon after Shankaracharya, there was a Brahmana scholar named Madana Mishra. And he had a disciple, Vachaspati Mishra. And these are the acharyas of a school of Mayavadi Darshan called the Bhamati school. And there's another school, Vivarana school. So this, as I say, this is very interesting. Within the philosophy of oneness, there are different schools. And they disagree with each other. They argue with one another. So Vachaspati Mishra, Madana Mishra, the first one, when he examined Shankaracharya's commentaries, he noted that there were some questions that needed to be answered. One of the questions is, who is bound up by illusion? Is it the jiva? Or is it Brahman itself? Another question is, when this Mahavakya, Tattvamasi, who exactly is Tattvamasi, the same as Brahman? Is it the fully realized jiva? Or is it any jiva? Any and all jivas, whether realized or not. Then another question is, who is in avidya, who is in ignorance? Again, is it the jiva who is in ignorance, or is ignorance actually within Brahman itself? And then finally, is there only one ignorance, or is there more than one ignorance? So these were doubts that came up from his reading of Shankaracharya's Sharirika Bhasya and other commentaries. So he wrote a commentary to explain away these doubts. And his answer to these questions is that it is the jiva who is in bondage, and only the self-realized, fully self-realized, Brahman-realized jiva can say tattvamasi. The jiva similarly is in avidya, not Brahman. And finally, about how many avidyas are there, he declared that there are as many avidyas as there are conditioned jivas. In other words, he was trying to keep avidya away from Brahman. If there's one Brahman and then we say there's only one avidya, then logically that is connecting Brahman to avidya. One Brahman, one avidya, that means Brahman is in avidya. But if you say one Brahman, many avidyas, so that is neatly keeping avidya away from Brahman. Avidya attaches itself to those parts and parcels of Brahman who are thinking they are separate from Brahman. A jiva is one with Brahman, but because he's thinking I'm an individual separate, he's in avidya. And so each jiva, thinking himself individual, has a particular special avidya attached to him. So this was Madana Mishra's attempt to answer these doubts that come up when one reads Shankaracharya's original Bhasyas. So then coming after him in the same Bhamati school was Vachaspati Mishra, who wrote the commentary which is known as Bhamati, which gives the name of the school. And Vachaspati Mishra, he saw, when he was looking at Madana Mishra's commentary, he saw some big problems. And one of the very big problems is that if we say that for every jiva there is a unique avidya, unique illusion, then why do we all experience the same world? Why are we all sharing the same experience of the world? We're all in one world. But if I have my own illusion, you have your own illusion, then we should all live in private little worlds. We should all be Lord Brahmas in a universe populated by exactly one living entity, that Brahma. We would all be enclosed in our own little sphere, completely separated from everyone else. If someone could go outside, one would just see a bunch of spheres floating in the void, surrounding every living entity who's thinking he's independent from Brahman. That would be the logical consequence of accepting Madana Mishra's viewpoint. So Vachaspati Mishra, he tried to drive away the doubts attached to this explanation. And then he did this by referring to Adi Shankaracharya's doctrine of Ishvara over the jiva. So in Shankaracharya's commentary, he makes room for Ishvara or God, but this God is not Brahman. This God is also an illusion, but it's a kind of exalted illusion. So he thinks he's God, and the jivas are below him. So this Ishvara, God, is also called Saguna Brahman. The real Brahman that we all should become one with is Nirguna. But then the Saguna Brahman, this is Ishvara, and then all kinds of questions come up. Then what is this? Saguna Brahman, you're saying this is Brahman, and Brahman's in ignorance? And then they have to jump around and shout, Anirvachaniya, Anirvachaniya, you can't talk about it. Don't ask that question. But these philosophers tried to answer these questions that I'm talking about. So Vachaspati Mitra, he pointed to this Saguna Brahman, this Ishvara, as being the coordinator. He first of all, he's the cause of all of what he called Tula Vidya, all the individual avidyas. So he's the origin, there's one origin of all these avidyas, and this Ishvara is the coordinator of them. So therefore we have this illusion that we are sharing the same world. So, very interesting. But who is this Saguna Brahman anyway? this Ishvara? Is he Jiva or is he actually Brahman? So in this Bhamati school, they cannot say that Ishvara is Brahman, because they want Brahman to be pristine, pure, above everything, pure oneness, and all the illusion going on down here among those of us who are thinking we are individuals. So, if this Brahman is untouchable by Maya, then how is it that we who are one with that Brahman are in Maya? This is the big problem for the Bhamati school. And another thing, talking about difference, this Madana Mishra, he was an atheist. He had no room in his philosophy for any Ishvara. So his disciple, his follower, Vachaspati Mishra, by bringing in this Ishvara, even though it's a Mayavadi version of Ishvara, he is disagreeing with his predecessor. So you can see in their struggle to explain their philosophy, they have to take different positions opposed to one another. And still the basic question remains unanswered. If everything is all one, then why is there Maya? You see? You can bring in Ishvara or not. It still doesn't answer this question. Your Ishvara is also in Maya. So how did he get in Maya? You see, this is the problem in logic of infinite regress. They want to explain how the Jiva came into Maya, his individual Maya. So they say, okay, there's above the Jiva, the Ishvara. So is that Ishvara Brahman? No. That Ishvara is also in Maya. Yes. Well, then how did he get in Maya? Anirvachaniya, don't ask that question. Don't raise this point. So this infinite regression, you see, they have to keep moving back. Where some point where this Maya begins. So then opposed to this Bhamati school is the Vivarana school. Vivarana is the name of a commentary written by one Prakash Atman, who came after Padmapada. Padmapada was one of the direct disciples of Shankaracharya, Adi Shankara. So Padmapada wrote the commentary, and that needed explaining. Padmapada's commentary, he puts Ishvara squarely into Brahman. He puts avidya, ignorance, squarely into Brahman. That the origin of ignorance is Brahman himself. And he also talks about Ishvara, but it's not clear whether the Ishvara is a Jiva or that Brahman. And so there are many, many questions that came up from his commentary. And so after him, this Prashak Atman, he tried to answer these questions by coming up with this commentary, Vivarana, which became the name of the school that opposes the Bhamati school. So you have these two schools, Bhamati, Vivarana. So in the Vivarana school, yes, ignorance resides in Brahman, and it is, the Jiva is a reflection of Brahman. So they rely on this idea of reflection, that ignorance reflects out of Brahman. Its origin is Brahman and it exists as a reflection. So Ishvara is a reflection of Brahman too, very powerful reflection that creates out of avidya. This initial avidya, which is reflected into Ishvara, he uses that to create this world. And all the jivas are also one with Brahman, but they are deluded by their own reflections. This is how he has tried to explain the whole problem. But this also falls far short of anything that we can sensibly call philosophy. Because if you say, Maya is a reflection only, and you say the jiva is just a reflection of Maya, a jiva is just a reflection of Brahman, and that is Maya, then, you see, when I go look in my mirror in the morning, I see a reflection. But this reflection is not talking to me. I don't see my mirror image and say, hello. And he doesn't say, hello back. How are you? How did you sleep last night? Oh, I had a nice sleep. So, shall we shave now? Shall we brush our teeth? Yes, let's do that. The question is how a reflection will have sentience and individuality. Our experience of reflection is it looks like us, but it's just a lifeless image. You see, as I move, it moves. It has no independence from me. Yet they are saying that by this principle of reflection, first there is an Ishvara who is different from Brahman, having a separate consciousness from Brahman, acting in his own way. And then, further reflection, there are so many jivas, countless jivas. And they all have their individual consciousness. And they all have their own lives and own activities. So how is this to be explained by reflection? This doesn't make sense. You see? And then, if we say all these jivas, all of them are really Brahman, and they've only forgotten their Brahman because they're deluded by their own reflection. This is rather silly even to say, you see? Rather silly explanation. So all the jivas are actually Brahman. They're just deluded by being reflected out of Brahman. And that's why they have to say that ignorance is within Brahman, because it comes out as reflection. So then, why isn't it that if one jiva will become self-realized, then all of them should become self-realized? You see, if they're all really one. They're all actually Brahman. Because this is the difference of the Vavarana school from the Bhamati school. Bhamati school is trying to say jivas are actually different from Brahman. And then when they come fully realized, they go back to being Brahman. This is the whole thing of Tula Vidya, their own individual ignorance that separates them. That philosophy has its own problems. But now, the Vavarana school tries to say, to get rid of those problems of the Bhamati school, no, jiva is same as Brahman. Only is just in some little illusion of the reflection of Brahman. Just this apparently is not very serious state. Maya. Apparently can be easily removed. But then, yes, if all jivas are really one with Brahman, really are Brahman, then if one jiva becomes liberated, since this sense of separateness from Brahman is not real at all, then they all should be liberated. Unfortunately, they're not. So then this difference again is striking home very deeply into the guts of this Mayavadi philosophy. They're unable to explain this difference. And then finally, so you've explain that Ishvara is reflected out of Brahman and then creates, using avidya, its own avidya of reflection, so many jivas, all this complex description of creation you've explained, and you've said this is all a reflection of Brahman. And then you say Brahman is nirvishesh. You see, nirvishesh means Brahman has no form. So what happens when nothing walks in front of your bathroom window and nothing looks into the mirror? What will nothing see in the mirror? Who can tell me? If nothing looks into the mirror, what will nothing see? Nothing! So, If this world is a big reflection of Brahman, then why is there something in this reflection? If Brahman is nirvishesh, nothing. Anirvachaniya, don't ask that question. Now there are other points of view within Mayavadi philosophy. There's a philosopher called Sarvagyanatman, which means the soul, Atman, who knows everything. So let's hear what this everything-knowing Atman has to say in defense of Mayavadi philosophy. So in his commentary, he was also holding the position that everything is one and that difference is thoroughly illusion. So then a question comes up, because you see, Mayavadi, as I said, Mayavadi Darshan, Mayavadi Vedanta, is supposed to fall within Vedic culture. That was Shankaracharya's mission. So this is an explanation of Vedic knowledge, Vedic culture, an explanation of absolute oneness. So then the question comes up, in the culture of Vedic knowledge, there is guru and there is disciple. And this is necessary for gaining knowledge, that knowledge which gives liberation, that one must have a guru. And the guru imparts this knowledge to the disciple. So, if everything is all one, then how is that working? That there is a guru and there is a disciple. One has knowledge, the other one doesn't. Doesn't that mean there's a difference? You see? When I need a guru, when I understand I must have a guru, I don't go looking for someone who's the same as me. If I'm working in a tea stall, you see, serving chai, and one day I realize I need a guru, I'm in ignorance, I'm suffering. So I don't go to another tea stall and speak with another chai wallow. Will you become my guru? Because I know he's the same as me. He's just as stupid as I am. I look for someone exalted, someone clearly different from me in all ways. So this Sarvagyanatman, the soul who knows everything, his reply to this problem is, what is guru? Guru is imagination. That's all. Everything is one. That's the reality. So your guru is just your imagination. Oh, very interesting. So then if guru is my imagination, then it is by imagination I should imagine my way out of birth and death. I should imagine my way to liberation? Is that how it works? Sarvagyanatman's reply is, actually, liberation and bondage, samsara, Brahman, Maya, Brahman, all of this is imagination. It's all a big dream. Everything is really just one. Any distinction, even between Brahman and Maya, between self and guru, disciple, guru, any distinction anywhere, that is all imagination, that is all dream. Then the question is, but then why do we find these same distinctions made in the Vedic literature, which is supposed to be the basis of your Advaita philosophy? Sarvagyanatman's reply is, if we take the Vedic literature literally, then Advaita will be destroyed. He writes this in his commentary. If we take the Vedic literature, to use Prabhupada's term, as it is, Bhagavad Gita, as it is, then this great Mayavadi philosopher admits, then the Mayavadi philosophy will be destroyed. So what he's saying is, we must have a license to speculate. In order to preserve our Mayavadi philosophy, we must have the license to speculate and to juggle words and twist meanings and bewilder everyone. And this way, our darshan will continue. In other words, in order for Mayavadi to go on, we have to cheat. This is what he's saying. So Mayavadi philosophy is cheating. And this Savaganatman, the all-knowing Mayavadi, he admits it openly. Then there's another one, Sureshwara, who wrote a big, big commentary on the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. So he tries to explain why is it we have this philosophy of oneness, Advaita Vedanta? Why are there so many different points of view? Why are there so many competing explanations? Bhamati school, Vibharana school, other points of view even. So he says, his conclusion is that the Advaita Vedanta Darshan, the philosophy of Advaita Vedanta, is for the ignorant. And those who are in true knowledge, they are simply perceiving oneness. There's only oneness for them. So they're even beyond philosophy, beyond everything, beyond explanation, beyond words, beyond the Vedas, beyond the differentiation between Brahman and Maya. They're beyond all that. So in other words, Mayavadi philosophy is for those who are in Maya. Well, that's what we say. Prabhupada used to say, Mayavadi means Mayaism, means those who stick to Maya. Those who are in Maya, they have this philosophy of Maya. So Sureshwara, a great Mayavadi commentator, this is what he says also. So, very good. Here's one Mayavadi we can agree with. Your philosophy is for persons who are in ignorance. And if you say that this philosophy, the very fact that it is rendered in words that is making distinctions, means that this philosophy itself is Maya, then you have to also admit that this philosophy for these people in ignorance will also not help those people get out of ignorance. You see, it is simply, that philosophy is simply a condition of their ignorance. That's all. So it is absolutely useless philosophy for bringing anyone into the light of the absolute truth. And then there is the well-known, finally I'll mention one more, the well-known Prakashananda. Prakashananda. So, he had a very special formulation of Mayavadi Darshan called Srishti Drishtivada. Or I think it's Drishti Srishtivada. Anyway, it's the doctrine that by seeing Drishti, the world is created. You see? In the Western terms, this is called metaphysical solipsism. This is the philosophy that, yes, there is only one self in existence, and that is me. So this philosophy gives each one of us individually the right to become a psychopath. To think that I am the only being in existence. And because drishti, I'm looking, therefore srishti, there is this world. So I'm the only one who exists, and you, all of you, you are just products of my looking. So another name for Prakashananda's philosophy is Ajativada, which means there is no creation. There is no external world. It doesn't exist. There is no God. There is only me. I exist, and everything else that's happening is just my imagination. The whole world is just created by me. So I'm thinking that way, but you're also thinking that way. So that's why I say this is actually psychopathology. If you go to the madhouse, you'll find it full of people like that. Each one is thinking, I'm the only person here. Everyone else is the product of my mind, product of my imagination. They're not really there. They've invented their own world. They don't see anyone else. They're just seeing what is generated from their own mind, their own hallucinations. So, you see, when we look at any of these standpoints rigorously, we find that there's no philosophy here at all. The original doctrine, Advaita Vedanta, is unsound. And after Shankaracharya, the various scholars and philosophers of this Mayavadi Darshan have been doing a mad dance, you see, a mad, crazy dance of logic, which is not logic, just desperation, trying to patch all the holes. But it's a sinking ship, you can't patch the holes. Too many holes, it's a sieve, you know? A sieve that they're calling a ship. Full of holes, and you put it in the water and it sinks, and you can patch this hole, that, but it'll still sink, too many. It makes no sense. So, let us go back to the Vedic literatures themselves. Yes, Veda, Abheda, both statements can be found. Eka Brahma, Dvitiya Nasti, Tattvamasi, yes. But Srila Prabhupada has explained this very nicely. That oneness does not have to mean, it is foolishness to take oneness in every case to mean absolute, non-differentiated identity. That is grammatically idiocy. You see, if someone every time they would use this word one, or not different, or the same, or in union, any phrase like that, they always in every case meant absolute, non-differentiated identity, then he would, a person talking like that, meaning like that, would be so out of touch with reality. He would be speaking in a way that no one else could understand. They would think he was crazy. Just like in ordinary language, two persons who have an intimate relationship, like husband and wife. So very commonly they're referred to as one, as a unit, you see, a pair, meaning one thing. Husband and wife are one. But at the same time, there's difference, obviously. There has to be difference. So there's oneness in a relationship. And Prabhupada is pointing, there's oneness in quality. You see, spirit, soul, and Paramatma, individual jiva, Paramatma, they have oneness in quality. And they are oneness in that they are always together in the heart. The jiva is, he never goes off by himself. When this body dies, he has to take another body. Paramatma doesn't say, alright, you go to the next body. I have to catch a Vimana back to Vaikuntha now. See you later. He always goes with the jiva. Anor anyan mahato mahyan atmasya jantu nito guhayam. So in the guha, this is from Katha Upanishad, in the guha, which means a secret place of the heart. Yes, there is atma, there is self. But this self has two features. One, anu atma, the individual soul, and the other, Mahatma, the Paramatma. And that they are different cannot be denied from this verse, because the verse goes on to say that the Anuatma remains in lamentation, Shoka, until he turns to the Paramatma. And by his grace, datu prasadam. By his mercy, by his grace, then he is delivered from his miserable condition. So you see in this verse from Katupanishad, both in one verse, both Beda, Abeda are expressed. Then another famous verse, often quoted by Srila Prabhupada, from the same Upanishad, Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitanam Eko Bahunam Yobidadati Kaman. It is so clear. That there are many Nityas, but above them there is one supreme Nitya, one supreme eternal being. There are many Chaitanas, many conscious living entities, but above them all is one supreme conscious being. And the many are depending on the one for satisfaction of their desires. So, in this way, a careful study of the Vedic scriptures shows that the philosophy is by no means simply Advaita, simply Abeda. There is also Beda. Even within one verse, we can find so many examples of single verses in which Beda, Abeda are expressed. So, different schools of Vedanta, different schools of Vaishnava Vedanta, have tried to explain this. And we honor them all, although it must be pointed out, when we read Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's purport to Brahma Samhita, verse 62, the last verse of the Brahma Samhita, he is also including the four Vaishnava Vedantas, Vishishta Dvaita, Dvaita Dvaita, Shuddha Dvaita, and Dvaita, which come respectively. Vishishta Dvaita from Ramanujacharya, Dvaita from Madhvacharya, Dvaita Dvaita from Nimbarkacharya, and Shuddha Dvaita from Vishnu Swami. So he has also counted these four standpoints as speculation. So ultimately, what happens in philosophy? There's a nice definition of philosophy I read in a book, that it's the attempt to use the mind to rise above the mind. That's a contradiction. To use the mind to rise above the mind. So when one becomes too much focused on using the mind to explain things and not relying upon parampara revelation, that Dhamam tu Shakshat Bhagavat Pranitam, the explanation of the Lord Himself. You see, then one becomes a little tied up in one's own words. And as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati points out, in these different philosophies, there are nice explanations in certain respects. But then when you move to other issues, then the explanations of a particular philosophy are not so good anymore. They're not working so well, because they've been bound to a certain doctrine, a certain vocabulary, a certain set of ideas. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati goes on to point out that the actual understanding, or the actual, we should better say, revelation of the Absolute Truth is Achincha Beda Abeda Tattva. Achincha meaning Krishna. Achincha is the name of Krishna. Achincha means he is inconceivable. Achincha Guna Surupam, his form is of inconceivable qualities. His Shakti, his potency, is called Achincha Shakti. This is Krishna, this is God. So we cannot nail him down, so to speak. We cannot capture him in the net of our ideas. Rather, we have to surrender to him. This is the whole point of Bhagavad Gita. Sarva dharmam prit. You give up your dharmas, your conceptions of dharma, and you surrender to me. So then by his grace, when we have surrendered to him, then he reveals himself to us. In this way, we can, so to speak, know the absolute truth. Pratyashavagamam dharmam, Krishna says in the Gita. Knowing not by inference, not by anuman, not by thinking about. You see, this in Western philosophy also, they have nice terms to help us understand this. Mediate and immediate. So something that is immediate item of knowledge, then it's coming through, it's filtered through a media. You see? The media of the mind. And immediate means, just like Krishna says, pratyashavagamam dharmam, that is experienced by direct realization. Immediate. Just like you get a phone call from a friend, and he tells you, I always think of these examples when I'm in Mumbai, so, because it's Bollywood, so. Last night I saw the new Shah Rukh Khan film. It just premiered last night. Oh, it was great. Shah Rukh was such a hero, beating all the bad guys. And so you hear about this film through the phone from your friend. And you get excited. You get inspired. And you have some visualization of the movie. But that is immediate. It is not immediate. What happens is by hearing your friend rave on and on about the film, what do you want to do? You want to go see the film. You see? So that's the immediate experience. It's not the same as seeing the film. Not the same. You want to go see the film. And so, there are some examples about Mayavadi philosophy, for example. That they say it's like, this philosophy is like the dream of a tiger. The philosophy and the practice, the whole Mayavadi darshan, everything, sadhan. It's like dream of a tiger. And this dream then wakes you up. You see, when you have a scary dream of a tiger, then you wake up and then, you realize, it was just a dream. Even the philosophy was just a dream. This is also helping to get an idea of the difference between mediate and immediate. So, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in other words, saying all these, what to speak of Mayavadi philosophy, even Vishishta Dvaita, Dvaita, etc., they're also within the classification of speculation. They're also, in other words, mediate, through the mind. Whereas the Achincha Bheda Abheda Tattva is immediate. Because Achincha is Krishna, and by his sweet will, after we surrender to him, he reveals himself to us. And then, Pratyashavagamam Dharmam, one sees directly Beda Abheda Tattva. That everything is simultaneously, inconceivably, one and different from Krishna. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur also gives a very nice explanation. That the oneness is Krishna's aspect. Krishna, he's one with everything. Because he's God. Nothing is out of his control. He has absolute mastery over everything. So that is oneness. That is real oneness. That is not just, some fool sitting in yoga asan. I am moving the moon across the sky. I am bringing out the stars. Now I will cause the sun to rise. Oh, I have to wait before I do that. He is now. Surya, come. You see? You see, this is false oneness. Krishna is really one with everything because everything is under his control. The jiva, on the other hand, is different. Our standpoint is we are different. We are not the controllers. We cannot say I am one with Krishna. We cannot say I am ruler of the heavens. So this is a nice insight by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So oneness, but yet at the same time, we are one in quality with Krishna, same quality. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetanam. So oneness and difference everywhere. So this is the proper explanation. Even mundane scholars, I have seen books by mundane scholars who are at least, they're mundaners, but at least they're a little objective. They haven't bought into some particular Vedanta doctrine. And they say, when they look at Vedanta Sutra and Upanishads, I've written where they themselves have said, somehow, we don't know exactly, we can't say exactly how what the intention of Srila Vyasadeva was, but somehow the author of the Upanishads and Vedanta Sutra, he was at the same time speaking of oneness and difference. So that can be seen even by a non-devotee scholar. You see, just looking at the Shastras themselves, he can see this. And then he writes, so the Advaita Vedanta doctrine is a kind of artificial imposition upon the statements of Shastra. It's clear that this is not the intention of Vyasadeva. I read one mundane scholar here in India write that. That Shankaracharya, whatever he was, great scholar, but he was trying to impose something on the Vedanta Shastras, which is not actually there. There are statements of oneness, but there also are statements of difference. So then they're saying, so then one has to arrive at the proper understanding of that. What is this oneness vis-a-vis difference? How do they work together? And the proper understanding is this achincha beda abeda tattva. This is philosophy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is Krishna himself. And this is the philosophy taught by Krishna himself in Bhagavad Gita. So this is Lord Krishna's own viewpoint. 9:30 already. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Would there be any question? Yes? Prabhu?
Maharaj, when devotees come together and talk Krishna consciousness and philosophy, we generally refer to, we understand Brahman as a place where the Mayavadi might go, he might merge with the effulgence, and because he has no higher taste, he might fall down. But I wanted to know, the Mayavadis, do they also consider Brahman as an abode, as a place, or is it for them a state of existence within, or what exactly is Brahman when the Mayavadis talk?
They can't say what Brahman is by their own philosophy, because that is also a nirvichaniya, like Maya. So, you see, it's prachanam bhaudham. The Buddhist philosophy is more straightforward because it is shunyavad. Beyond this world of Maya, according to Buddhism, there is nothing. There is shunya, there is emptiness. So, therefore, there's really nothing to explain, you see, about that. There's nothing there. What more can you say about it? But Shankaracharya, taking this basic conception of emptiness, He's tried to say that there's something there. Brahman is there and it is Sat. There in, the Buddhists say, there is not. But Shankaracharya is saying, there is. You see? And then this raises, is what? All these questions, is what exactly? But just as the Buddhists, they have their term, avyakrita vastuni, also means inexpressible subject matters. And so the Mayavadis have borrowed that, just changed the philosophical terminology to anirvachaniya, as I said. So this is a realm that cannot be discussed, what Brahman is. It is just not allowed. Although still, they try to explain it. but according to the precepts, the basic precepts of their philosophy, it cannot be expressed in words. It is beyond words. And so at the end of the day, Mayavadi philosophy is, Hare Krishna, is really no improvement on Buddhism whatsoever. Because if you say that the absolute truth cannot be talked about, if you give warning that if you try to talk about it, then you'll go into illusion, then what you're saying is that there is no way to explain this Brahman in words, then what are the Vedas? The Vedas are called Shabda Brahma. They are the expression of Brahman in words by their own definition. The Vedas are apaurusheya, they're not human-made literatures. And one is supposed to be able to achieve Brahman through that sound vibration, because it is a spiritual sound. But the Mayavadis are saying, no, Brahman is beyond all words, even the words of the Shastra. And Buddhism is based, Buddhism comes out of the rejection of Vedic Shastra. That is Buddhism. The first precept is, the Vedas do not give us real knowledge. So Buddhadev rejected the Vedas. So the Buddhists do not discuss Veda. You see? That is just something of the material world to them. So Mayavadis, the Advaita Vedantists, they seem to come back to the Vedas. Yes. We are, like Shankaracharya used this term, Upanishadika Darshan. Our darshan is through the Upanishads. Our understanding is... So they seem to come back to the shelter of the Vedas. But at the end of the day, they're saying, no, Brahman is not expressed even in Vedic language. So then, how do you achieve Brahman? And that's why it's such a big mystery for them. That's why they argue fruitlessly. And ultimately, Prabhupada says, what is their process? Prabhupada points it out. It is kalpana, it is imagination, that's all. Brahman is just something whatever they imagine. That's why that, as I said, sarva gyanatman, everything is a dream. You see, guru is imagination. The difference between liberation and bondage, that is all just a dream. Both are just states of dream. So, there's no use in trying to understand how Mayavadis understand anything, because they understand nothing. Literally, their philosophy is trying to understand nothing, because it's just prachanam bodham, it's just another form of Buddhism. The Buddhists, at least, are honest about it. We are shunyavadis. You see, we give them more credit. We give the Buddhists more credit. They're shunyavadis. They say clearly, we don't accept Vedas. Our goal is void. Okay. Good. Clearly stated. Still makes no sense, but it's clearly stated. But the Mayavadis are juggling. You see? They're trying to mix in Vedas with all this Brahman, assign the term Brahman to the Buddhist void, and they just make a big mush out of everything. And everything is one, and you don't know where to draw the line between Brahman and Maya, so it could be anywhere. And so then you end up with modern day Mayavadis like Osho, who writes a book entitled Sambhogase Samadhi. You see, you'll find your samadhi, you'll find your Brahman, your absolute truth, in the sexual act. So, you see, this is so anathema, you know, there's this word anathema, which means like it is so extremely opposed to the original teaching of Adi Shankaracharya. You can't get more, he was such a strict sannyasi. And then and nowadays we have people teaching this nonsense. But it's possible with this philosophy because there's, you see, it's all just imagination, kalpana, and where you draw the line. You can draw the line your way, I draw the line my way, you say, you see. And this is showing the bankruptcy of this philosophy because all the time it's supposed to be the philosophy of oneness. So why don't all the Mayavadi say the same thing? You see? So, there's no point in getting into it. But anyway, your question is still interesting because the word Brahman is a word that you can look up in the Sanskrit dictionary. And there you find that the root of the word Brahman, Brim, means growth, development. So the Vedic definition of Brahman is that which is nourishes growth, expansion. So therefore, this material world is also called Brahman in Bhagavad Gita, Mahabrahman, because it is also exhibiting such wonderful growth on a cosmic scale, expansion. You see, Atarto Brahma Jignasya, now inquire into Brahman. What is Brahman? Janmadhyasya Yata. The source of that. That is Brahman. The source of that growth of the material world is Brahman. So this is the basic definition of Brahman. That it is a source of growth, source of expansion, source of wonderful power. So this applies also to the spiritual world. The spiritual world is an exhibition, as we know, it is infinite, yet infinitely expanding. So the spiritual world is in that sense Brahman. Vaikuntha is Brahman. You see? Because it is a display of wonderful expansion. That's, you look in the standard Sanskrit dictionary, and that's how you'll find Brahman is defined. So, you know, even the dictionary agrees with Vaishnava philosophy. See? This is how Vaishnavas view Brahman. Now, there's therefore a difference. We have to distinguish between Brahman and Brahmajyoti. It is a mistake to think that these words are saying the same thing. Now, Srila Prabhupada, he sometimes speaks of impersonal Brahman. So that term then is equivalent to Brahmajyoti. Impersonal Brahman. But there is nothing in the word Brahman itself that necessitates that it be impersonal. It is a word that is simply focusing on this power of expansion. You see? And that is ultimately Krishna. So he is Brahman or Param Brahman. So his Jyoti, his Prakash, that is the Jyoti of Brahman, the light of the spiritual manifestation, the spiritual sky, Param Vyoma. So this Jyoti, just like the sky here, the Akash here, it is the space in which this cosmic creation is manifested. So similarly, of course, we will run afoul if we try to understand the Paramajyoti in terms of material space. Sripad Madhvacharya has gone to great length. This is inconceivable for us. You know, we don't have brains to understand these things. But great Vaishnava philosophers like Madhvacharya have distinguished between the... He said there's a material Akash and there's a transcendental Akash. So that is the Param Vyoma, Brahmajyoti. And so within that transcendental Akash, there is space for the expansion of the spiritual world. But again, don't think of that in physical terms, because that is all in the realm of pure consciousness. So anyway, this Param Vyoma, spiritual sky, Brahma Jyoti, it is absolute in an impersonal sense, and so the impersonalists, they find their goal in that. So I like to warn people who start to ask too many questions about Brahma Jyoti, watch out. Because Brahma Jyoti is there to capture the Mayavadis. You see? It is this Jyoti, this Brahma Jyoti is, it has a, being on the edge of things also, it has a dual function. It's like Krishna says in Gita, Naham Prakasha Sarvasha Yoga Maya Samavrita Mudhoyam Nabhijana. So for the mudhas, his Yoga Maya is pushing them away from him. We understand Yoga Maya to bring us to him, but here he says Yoga Maya is pushing them away. So that's particularly in reference to this impersonal Brahman, Brahma Jyoti. It has that effect on those who are mudhas, foolish, that they become bewildered by it. They think, yes, this is the supreme, this is the absolute truth. And that oneness that they experience, they're being sucked into when they come in contact with it, this is what they think is very nice, you see. But for Vaishnavas, Kaivalya Narikayati, Prabhunananda Saraswati says, it is hellish. Vaishnavas will never accept. So, when Gop Kumar came to that marginal region between the material world and spiritual world, in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, that region which is ruled over by Lord Shiva, Sarashiva, is on the very border. And that border region, Kailash, is full of jyoti, full of effulgence. So he came there, and it is described by Sanatana Goswami that he became bewildered because he was sometimes seeing the Ishwara there, separate from him. Then he felt himself merging into that Ishwara. And then he saw the Jyoti, and then he felt himself merging into Jyoti. And so he wasn't sure at all what his position was anymore. Am I one with the Lord? Am I different from the Lord? And then Lord Shiva blessed him by saying, this place is not for you. You're a devotee. So you go on into Vaikuntha. This place is for the yogis and impersonalists and mental speculators, jnanis. They all come here. But this is not for you. So you go on. That was his blessing. So this is also, you see, Lord Shiva, Naham Prakasha Sarvasya, Yoga Maya Samavrata. He is a Vaishnava. He gives blessings to other Vaishnavas to go on. And Brahma Sangita describes that the spiritual world is protected by Brahma Jyoti in the form of Trishul. Brahman in the form of Trishul. The Jyoti takes the form of tridents, Lord Shiva's weapons. And those who try to enter the spiritual world by some non-devotee process, non-devotional process, some jnana, some yoga, something like that, they get stuck on this Trishul. So Lord Shiva stops them. He stops them, and they're left hanging on the end of his trident like bugs. You see? And he keeps them there. And they think they're one and all this. They have these realizations of being one with everything, etc., etc. So this is why Vrindavan Dham is protected by Lord Maheshwara. He keeps out the non-devotee impersonalists, but for the devotees, he's blessing them. You go in. Because he himself is actually Vaishnavan Yata Shambhu. He's the greatest Vaishnava. We worship Lord Shiva as the best of devotees. And when he recognizes another devotee, this is his grace. Yes, you go into Vaikuntha. you enter the Lord's abode and serve Him. Okay, Maharaj, yes.
Sometime back, I met one a Vaishnava philosopher, and he told that the Mayavadi says the Brahman is anirvachaniya, beyond expression. And all other Sampradayaka Acharyas, they came and told that, no, it can be understandable. So they are very clear. But as far as Lord Chaitanya is concerned, he uses achintya, means it's inconceivable. Which looks like, appears to be, it cannot be clearly mentioned. So they say that he just not explained properly. And another thing is that, though Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur mentions the four sampradayas are nothing but speculation, but still Acharyas and Srila Prabhupada himself quotes, and other our Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharyas like Goswamis, they give credits to them. So that what is the difference between this Mayavadi speculation and this philosophical speculation by the four sampradayas? These two doubts.
Well, I'm going to answer very short. If the questions are going in this direction, then we'll be here till the Sunday feast program starts. These are like lecture subject matters. In fact, I gave a lecture on the first question, and you were there. So you're asking the same question that I talked about in a previous lecture here about achincha. Achincha does not mean anirvachaniya. Achincha means Krishna. But Krishna is even the liberated soul, and Prabhupada explains this in his purports, that even a liberated soul cannot comprehend Krishna. Just because one becomes liberated, free from the modes of material nature, does not mean that he's Krishna conscious. The jiva does not have the power to bring Lord Krishna within his sphere of examination. Krishna is not an object of our knowledge. He's not an object of the jiva's knowledge. So, but Krishna, he being all powerful, he reveals himself to whomsoever he reveals. And the Upanishads, these two well-known shlokas in Mundaka Upanishad and one other Upanishad, I forgot now, makes the same point. That you cannot achieve the absolute truth by your own speculation or realization or by study of Shastra or by Pravachan, by speaking very expertly, very reasonable, very Shastric philosophy. Just because you can speak very nicely doesn't mean that by this power you bring the Lord under your power of examination. The Lord reveals Himself to whom He reveals Himself. That's all. He can reveal Himself to a great scholar, or He may not. There's a story from Indian history of a great logician who was arguing against the Mayavadis, arguing against the Advaita Vedantists and defeating them. And he was touring around India, defeating all the impersonalists. And then he came to Jagannath Puri, and he wanted to have darshan of Lord Jagannath. But when he came to the Jagannath temple, the doors were closed and would not open. The priests could not get the doors to open. Lord Jagannath slammed the doors. And this I've forgotten his name. He's not really known among devotees. He's more known among the Nyaya people. But he was a kind of, as he said, he was standing before the closed gates of the Jagannath Mandir, and he was saying, "But I did this for you. I went around defeating all these Mayavadis for you, and now you won't let me have darshan." You see, so the Lord is not brought under anyone's control. They may be great logicians, expert with words. They may even be arguing on his behalf, but that does not mean that therefore they have power over him. So this is the meaning of Achincha. This is Krishna. Yes, he is inconceivable. He reserves the right to remove himself from anybody's sphere of knowledge, field of knowledge, to keep himself out. So, Lord Chaitanya's philosophy is based on this principle, the actual position of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada, in a conversation also, he was being asked about the spiritual nature as being distinct from the material nature, and the jiva belonging to that spiritual nature. And in the course of this conversation, Prabhupada, the way he was answering these questions, one devotee had a kind of realization and said to Srila Prabhupada, "So, Srila Prabhupada, you're saying that spirit, the jiva, is transcendental to matter. And you're saying that Krishna is transcendental to spirit." And Srila Prabhupada said, "Yes, you have understood." So all these Vaishnava darshans, their goal is moksha. They admit that. They want to achieve moksha. Their own acharyas have declared that they're teaching a means of moksha. But simply attaining moksha does not mean one has attained Krishna consciousness. So, this is why Lord Chaitanya's Achincha Veda Veda Tattva philosophy is the real philosophy, is the real understanding. So then, what was the second part of your question?
Though, what is the difference between these two kind of speculation, Mayavadis and Vaishnavacharyas? Because our sampradaya also seems to give credits many times to their works, like Baldev Vidyabhushan quotes Madhvacharya.
Well, Mayavadi, I tried to make that clear in my talk. The difference, Mayavadis are out of the picture entirely. It's just cheating. It's just word jugglery. They claim to be Vedic, but they're actually Buddhists, is what they are. They're actually non-Vedic. We cannot actually accept Mayavadi philosophy as being Vedic philosophy. Mayavadi asatchatram pratyanam baudamuchate. It is against Shastra. So, these Vaishnava Vedanta darshans, they are actually based on Shastra, and they are personal. They are admitting that the Lord is the Supreme Personality, the Personality of Godhead, and they're admitting that the process of attaining Him is bhakti. But they lean towards liberation, as I said. And so this turns out to be a kind of Mishra Bhakti, Gyan Mishra Bhakti. So there, that's why Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he points out, there is much in these philosophies that is good, that is accurate. But they are not, take any philosophy, it is not good in all positions. And this is why they argue with each other. This is why it's not only that the Ramanujas and the Madhvas simply argue with the followers of Sankaracharya. They also argue with each other. They also debate each other. So this debating with each other, you see, this is indicating that they're hung up on the platform of the mind and intellect. Because of their concern for liberation. Srila Prabhupada explained, when Krishna says, Sarva Dharmam Parityaja, Mamekam Sharanam Braja, then that concern for liberation is being dismissed. Srila Prabhupada very clearly said, December 1976 in Vrindavan, that if one is thinking that I have to do something to ensure my liberation, that I have to do something, I have to take my own steps to ensure liberation, Prabhupada said, then you are a rascal. Because Krishna says, I will deliver you. Krishna makes that very clear. I will deliver. What you have to do is surrender to me. And this is essential to Achincha Abheda Veda Tattva philosophy. Achincha, Krishna, the inconceivable absolute personality of Godhead. We cannot know him. We cannot, just like the scientists will never see him in a telescope. No matter how big a telescope they make, they can send a telescope into outer space. It can be powered by hundreds of thousands of kilowatts of electricity, but they'll never see Krishna in their telescope. And similarly, by the telescope of the mind, this Brahma Samhita, Pantastu Koti Shatavatsara Sampragamyo, one can travel in the vehicle of the mind through the Brahma Jyoti for millions and millions of years, but one will never, by one's own power, have darshan of Govinda. So you see, this business of trying to attain liberation means by my own power, to some degree or other. There's things I have to do by my own power. And there's no need to think of this, that there's some fault in these great Vaishnava Acharyas. Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, that the fault is with them. No. They are preaching to Brahmanas. You see, their audience is these Brahmanas, their nature is, they're in the mode of goodness. That is a material designation. So, they have attachment to knowledge, they have attachment to liberation, to becoming liberated. This is ingrained in them by their material nature. So these acharyas came to make Vaishnavas out of Brahmanas. Therefore they preached just like Shankaracharya came to make followers of Vedas out of Buddhists. So he had to make... So it's 10 o'clock, I'm going to stop now. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.